Thank you, m'lady. I know a number of things that have to do with England. Let me tell you the tale of a knight of that land. I understand that England is one of the Frankish kingdoms in the western part of Frangistan. This is a poem concerning the doings of a very valiant knight of that land. It may be the most valiant of whom stories tell. William the Marshal is come into France to win him renown with his sword and his lance. In all that fair country, no knight can be found in battle or tourney to cast William down. William the Marshal, right loyal was he and valiant in service to good King Henry. On the helms of the French knights he made his steel ring, and beside them fought Richard, the son of our king. King Philip of France thought the war he had won when he leagued with Count Richard, our king's eldest son. For in aging king's knights very rarely are known to blithely bear steel against the heir to the throne. Count Richard was doughty and heavy of hand and called no man master through France or England. But William the Marshal, through all of the West, had fought in no combat save he proved best. It chanced that our army had suffered a rout, from which fled the king with but few men about. Them did Count Richard most fiercely pursue, and his company was valiant but few. Quoth Henry, good comrades, the foe follow fast. We have fought many battles, but this is the last. Nay, sire, said William, I think it not so. By your leave, I remain here to hinder the foe. So William the Marshal, with one knight beside, his liege lord to save, turned him back in his ride. His shield on his arm, his lance couched low, he wheeled round his horse and rode straight at the foe. Count Richard leads rashly. With three men or four, so quickly he'd come that no armor he wore. Straight at the leaders rides William in wrath, with Richard Plantagenet right in his path. They say that Count Richard was valiant and fell, a lion in battle, as many tales tell. But even a hero is apt to get hurt when the best lance in Europe comes aimed at his shirt. Count Richard was valiant and royally proud, yet he stood in his stirrups and shouted aloud, oh, slay me not, Marshal, for armor I've none, and to slay me unarmored right basely 'twere done. But William replied, and his rage it was hot, the devil may slay you, the Marshal will not. He slacked not his charge, and he bent not his course, but his lance point came down, and he slew Richard's horse. This only remains, ere a month passed away, King Henry of England upon his bier lay, in grief for his knights there all standing around, when to them came Richard, heir to the crown. Seeing the Marshal, he called him apart, but lately you sought with your lance for my heart. You charged me unarmored, and I would be dead, but your lance struck my arm, and my horse died. Nay, sire, said William, you do me great wrong. My eye is still clear and my arm is still strong. I struck where I aimed, and I wished it instead. Your horse would still live and another be dead. I sought for your death neither then nor before, but would think it no crime to have slain you in war. Be pardoned, said Richard, I'll bear you no ire. And pray that men serve me as you served my sire. Does someone else have something for the company?
Wow. May I play some whistle? May I play some whistle?
Sure.
Thank you.
Karina, since you are now living in the land of the Northmen, are you familiar with the tales they have? Because I have some riddles which have to do with the stories of the Northmen.
I've heard a number. I don't know any well enough to tell.
I was thinking of riddles that perhaps you or someone else here could answer. Let me start with the easiest one. The snake with one wing and 40 legs sheds its scales on the sand.
A snake with
one wing and 40 legs sheds its scales on the sand.
Is it scales on the sand?
What is that describing? From the world of the North.
A longship coming in.
And what are the scales?
Shields.
What?
Shields.
Shields.
Shields, correct. That's right. Mm-hmm. The longship coming in. Let me try another that is perhaps not, is really for people familiar with the poetry of the Northmen and how they do it. But you don't need that, actually. You just have to be clever enough. Riddles. My sting is in my tail. I am that snake whose sting is in his tail. I only bite when I have shed my skin. What snake am I? My sting is in my tail. I only bite when I have shed my skin. What snake am I?
A sword?
I was going to say a sword.
The kenning for sword is wound snake. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. Let me try another. Could not bear up the foe of a mouse as a bright-eyed bride brought down the house.
I didn't hear all of that.
Could not bear up the foe of a mouse as a bright-eyed bride brought down the house. This is from one of the tales that the Northmen tell about those they falsely believe to be gods.
It wasn't really
heard it well enough, and I certainly
what?
Say it again.
Could not bear up the foe of a mouse as a bright-eyed bride brought down the house.
Could not bear up the foe of a mouse.
Perhaps if someone comes who knows the various tales of the North, then we can get him to tell us that one at some point.
I was asked to pick up the cat, but it was the Midgard serpent. Thor was asked to pick up the cat, but it was actually a piece of the Midgard serpent, and he got the cat to lift one leg up.
And do you remember the other half of it? You've got half of this. You've got the right story. Do you remember the other half of that tale, the, as a bright-eyed bride brought down the house? Tor?
Oh, it froze.
Oh, no. Yep.
This is Tor disguised as Freya.
Yes.
So he took the, he was told to break a cup, and he threw the cup through pillars. That, but I didn't think that the feast hall actually fell as a result.
The, this is where he is pretending to be Freya in order to get his hammer back.
Mm-hmm.
And he, once he has the hammer, he basically destroys the surrounding hall where it is happening. But that's, but you got the basically the right one. Here's another from the same sort of source, but I think maybe a harder one, maybe not. I met my mate, which lost a bet, but swiftest treasure did I get.
Excuse me, Your Grace?
Yes?
I would love to hear some stories from the Crusades. From what happened with the Crusades in the last season and everything, if you know any. Oh, sorry.
I've been told, I'm a Westerner, I'm a Maghrebi, I've been told various things of the Franks attacking in the lands of peace, but I'm not sure I know any real stories from that. Let me see if what are other tales. Well, actually, let's see, does somebody else have a poem, song, or story for us?
I have, if I may have, I may do a riddle that would actually, you would probably answer rather quickly, I would think.
Maybe not.
We were playing at riddles yesterday at a gathering, and this was one that was presented then. So those of you who were there, you'll know what I mean. So I am an oasis in the desert, and I am a mirage. I am the most succulent piece of meat that you have ever sunk your teeth into, and I am rotted flesh. I am the sweetest wine that has ever rolled across your tongue, and I am poison. What am I?
And I suppose life would be the obvious answer, but it's probably not the one you intend.
No, but that's a good one. That is a good answer. Anyone else who wasn't there yesterday? Shall I repeat it?
Yes.
All right. I am an oasis in the desert, and I am a mirage. I am the juiciest bit of meat that you have ever sunk your teeth into, and I am rotted flesh. I am the sweetest wine that has ever rolled across your tongue, and I am poison. What am I?
Is it a falsehood?
Gossip, yes.
Gossip.
That is it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That is it.
Ah, gossip.
That reminds me a little bit of one of my riddles, which I suppose is of the same very general sort. I am the cup still full, though the hall drink me dry. I weave the web no sword can cut, no shield deny. I am the treasure and tale of a king. I am the longest lived of all man's making. I am the cup still full, though the hall drink me dry. I weave the web no sword can cut, no shield deny. I am the treasure and tale of a king. I am the longest lived of all man's making.
Is it faith?
Is it what?
Faith.
Faith?
Faith or belief.
Hmm?
Faith or belief.
I don't think faith is the treasure and the tale of the taking of faith, whereas mine, in fact, is both the treasure itself and the tale of how that treasure was acquired.
So is it history?
Yes. You're getting a little closer, but not much closer.
Is it reputation?
That's getting even closer. Reputation is a part of that, because reputation is the web no sword can cut, no shield deny. But what is it that weaves reputation in the land of the Northmen? Or some other places?
Brave deeds?
That's the source of it, but if nobody ever hears about the brave deeds, you don't get a reputation from them.
Your hairbrush must have fallen down.
What? How do people in the Northlands come to know your fame?
Word fame. Word fame.
What?
Word fame.
And what is the form that takes?
Sagas.
Sagas, yes.
Well, maybe sagas are one part of it, but I think something that you will find in the sagas, but is not what the sagas are, and something that is much, much more general than the sagas.
Speech?
What?
Speech. Speech.
Speech. Again, you're getting close, but I don't know of a tale of how people got speech, but I do know of a tale that fits this. Do you not know the tale of how Odin, who the Northmen in their ignorance believed to be a god, got the mead of poetry? Which tale is itself a poem, because it is a part of the poems that the Northmen tell you? The answer to my riddle is poetry. I am the cup still full, though the hall drink me dry. I weave the web of reputation, of fame, no sword can cut, no shield deny, including bad reputation. I am the treasure and tale of the taking, because the tale of how Odin got mead of poetry is itself a poem. I am the longest live of all men. We are told by a very wise Northman, who may even have composed one or another of the sagas. We don't know. So I've heard rumors that the best way of happened in the past is by the scholar poems written in the past, that they survived. So that's the answer to that riddle, and I was reminded of it by your gossip one, which is the same sort of riddle answer, as it were, general thing. Does someone else have something for us?
I could sing Death and the Maiden.
Sure, why don't you sing that then?
Okay. I have been singing this for a long time, and I no longer remember the exact details of where. It's 16th century, and it's Europe.
It is somewhere from Frangistan. It is from somewhere in Frangistan, you believe. That suffices.
Okay. A maid walked out one day. She spied an old man along the way. His hair was white, his beard was gray, his clothing made of the cold earth and clay. His clothing made of the cold earth and clay. She said, "Old man, what man are you? What country do you belong unto?" "My name is Death, hast heard of me? All kings and princes bow down unto me, and you, fair maid, must come along with me." I'll give you gold, I'll give you pearls, I'll give you costly rich robes to wear. If you can spare me but a little while, and give me time my life to amend, and give me time my life to amend. I want no gold, I want no pearls, I need no costly rich robes to wear. I cannot spare you but a little while, nor give you time your life to amend, nor give you time your life to amend. In 6 months' time this poor maid died. Let this be writ on my tombstone, she cried. Here lies a poor distressed maid. All in her prime she was carried away. Her clothing now is the cold earthen clay.
Thank you. I have a poem that has at least ends with a death. And there's a poem also from Frangistan, from the German Franks, who are, I believe, one of the chief tribes of the Franks. It is called the Hildebrandslied. I have heard it told how between two hosts the heroes, Hildebrand and Hadubrante, son and father, fought together, fought apart. The heroes fasten well-tried war coats over ring shirts, belt their brands on, ride to battle. Hildebrand, the ancient hero, asked the other his ancestry, who among the hosts his father, what his family. Noble folk, can I all within the kingdom, so your sire's name suffices. Hadubrand spoke, Hildebrandson. Ancients of the tribe have told me Hildebrante, hight my father. I hight Hadubrante. He fled east from Odoacer's royal wrath, fled Hildebrante with his warriors to Theotri. Left behind him wife in bower, babe and young wife, both behind him. Theotri, that was so friendless, first of all his men, my father loved, who, loathing Odoacer, joyed in battle, brave at forefront, brave men knew him well. He died, I doubt not, long ago. Hildebrand spoke, Herebrandsson, God hold witness from the heavens, never be thou battle met with so close to thee a kinsman. Drew the arm rings, king gifts golden from his arm, the Hun king's presents. These I give thee glad in friendship. Hadubrand spoke, Hildebrandsson, such things seek I with my spear point, point to point in open battle. You are old in craft, most cunning. When your words make me unwary, then your spear throw quick will kill me. You grew old by such deception. Word comes over western waters, sailors bring it. Say in battle, dead is Hildebrande, Herebrandsson. From your brand and bright mail jerkin, I can see your lord is kindly. From his hand thou never had exile and cruelty. God me pity comes my fate. 30 summers. 30 winters I have wandered, held the front in each fierce battle, stormed before the walls, still no man brought me death in any battle. Now my son's brand batters me down, else I slay him with my sword. Thou hast courage, come with death, winning war coat from warrior old, an easy task to him who for such things has any right. Not the most fearful of eastern folk could fight deny, thou art so eager, come, see of us who gives up his battle coat, who brings home too. The heavy ashen spears they hurl like rain, to cluster in the shields they close on foot, breaking the battle boards with heavy blows, splitting them till the fragments fall apart, broken by blows, now blade is loud on blade. Twice Hildebrande bleeds, but not heart's blood. A third time Hadubrant brings down his sword. Full on his father's helm the blade falls, fountains fire. the helm groans like a gong, glances the blow. Then Hadu Branta cries aloud, curse on the crippled blade. The old Hun's head is hard as fire rock. His helm defends him, though his blade is dumb. His craft is in this treasure, and his tongue, I'll split them both. Throws down his broken shield. With both hands, yields his sword up to the height. Hadu Brant lets fall the blow. Hildebrandt flings high his shield. The broken oak binds fast the falling blade. Then Hildebrandt, hot with rage, strikes with a heavy hand. The blow goes home, bursting the rings beneath the helmet rim, through golden collar and through collarbone, broken, battering away. Hildebrandt falls. With both hands, Hildebrandt tugs out the blade. Blood follows. Hadu Brant, Hildebrandsson, dies in his blood while weeps above. Hildebrandt, Herebrandsson. Does somebody else have a poem, song, or story to entertain the company?
I could give you a song, but, did you want to go, m'lady?
Sorry, somebody was... Two people were offering, and yes, we do.
Carl?
Indeed.
She said
Carl. Okay, yes, indeed. I have danced to this melody many times and have discovered that there are words.
All right.
The heart's ease. Sing care away with sport and play, pastime is all our pleasure. We fare for naught, we care, in mirth consists our treasure. It is the best to live at rest, and take as God doth send it, to haunt each wake with mirth to make, and with good fellows spend it. But nothing is worse than a full purse to churls and to pinches. For there we spare and live in care. No one loves such flinches. Every man with cup and can live longer than do 20. The miser's wealth doth harm his health. Examples we have plenty. What to avail the hour to wail in pensiveness and sorrow? Who may tell that we may well live here until the morrow? Will therefore forevermore, while this our life is lasting, drink and sleep and merry keep to saintly lonely fasting?
Thank you. That's very pretty. Here's a poem of mine written a very long time ago. My first year dwelling in the East Kingdom, they held a contest for ballads on the topic Quest for a Kingdom. And it was a rather odd time for me to be writing a poem on that subject, so I wrote the following double ballad. Comes now an errant knight of Tregartsy. How can I quest a kingdom who have found an empty throne beside the eastern sea? And know that more than serfs are sovereigns bound. All quests are ended when a king is crowned. It were for England a more fortunate thing had Barbarossa lived and Richard drowned. For where is quest sufficient to a king? But what and where's my kingdom? Can it be this tattered cloak, this faded purple gown, an empty chair beside the restless sea? To such dead things must Eastern kings be bound. Nay, few would fight for such a leaden crown, not though the land were gardens in the spring, and mine to watch it blooming from the ground. There were no quest sufficient to a king. Only the crown descendeth unto me. The kingdom's no more solid than a sound that must be built on air unceasingly, and to that labor must a king be bound. There is the light that burns above the crown, far goal and farthest grail of errantry. The new crowned king who searcheth far around will find no quest sufficient to a king. A kingdom is all dike land, and must drown, save that its lord do battle with the sea. To that long labor must a king be bound. There is the quest sufficient to a king.
I will need to depart soon, for I have a very long journey to get myself home so that I may sleep this evening, even though the day is very young for all of us here. Before I go, Carl, I have just sent you a page with my address. Could you please write down those lyrics and send them to me via post? I would very much like to have a copy of them. And if you will, I would like to share one final song, this time from the other language of the North, the language a little further to the east between where my home is and the Rus, my mother's language. It's a song that she used to sing to me before I would sleep when I was very small. Tu, 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 kom poika, teki pesatilla, nauris da, dup pesatilla, kivien alta, yesoi sentikan, nauris da. I never learned the language of my mother's people, but having moved to the north, I have taken the journey over and met some of my cousins, who have told me what this song means. The song says, Wick-wee woodpecker, cooking a turnip on the road. An old man came from under the rocks and ate the woodpecker's turnip. And with that, I will bid you all a good day and set on my long journey homeward.
Travel safely, m'lady.
Thank you very much.
I suppose since it is summertime, even in the Northlands, you will probably not freeze. Here is another poem concerning the position of the king. It is called Two Voices. There is nothing above the king, no power to speak him nay. This is the hour of anything, the dawn of my golden day. This is the law behind the king. Greater power, greater bond. Who might order anything must bend to the breeze like a willow wand. There is nothing written above my throne. No strength can cast me down. The kingdom and power are mine alone by the sword that won my crown. This is the law behind the king. Feast or famine, peace or war, he is not master of anything. The poorest peasant is richer far. The knights with their shining swords, by right of might, they are mine. The people, their beasts, and their lords, ghost, be gone with thy riddle rhyme. Son, be done with thy foolish words. No man may rule my land. No man can master 100 swords, whatever the strength of his hand. Rule for power and pride, alone in an empty hall. Serve or step aside, the king is a servant or nothing at all. Somebody else want to offer something for our company?
I wish to, if I may, present a poem.
Surely.
Written very recently for one you may well have known, Your Grace, one who has recently departed to, I hope we believe in the same God, sir, though we give him a different name. And I like to think this man has gone to join him. And I have a poem I have written for him. It is a sonnet for Edward Ziffron of Gendi. A comet pierces eastern skies tonight, the lights of which we shall not see again. The passing of a giant among men is heralded with its celestial flight. one blessed with skill, with puissance, with great might, adept likewise with needle as with pen, now makes a journey far beyond our ken with bravery, our simple country knight. The evil that men do lives after them? We know this is not altogether true, for we have seen the good this man has done. His wisdom, like unto a precious gem, he mended fences, quarrels not a few. Recall his light. Now Edward's race is run.
Thank you. I have a poem of mine for somebody who left us some considerably longer time ago, but my master. It's a missed war song. A warrior is the shield of his people. Before and before and long before, someone is walking along the shore, sowing seed as white as bone between the sea and the bitter stone. The mist blows off. The empty sand shows no mark of the foot of man. Meadow green, forest tall, no beacon fire, keep or wall. Sea-wise eyes of Aegle's kin scan the shore and send her in. Sea steed drives to naked shore, war-hard hands on rope and oar. Serpent scrapes the sand, and then the shore is sudden black with men. Tattered mist for pennon flies, broken back, the serpent dies. Raiders shun our fenceless sands, fortune find in other lands. Though our walls be few and weak, Hawks Hill fire elsewhere seek. Walls of stone in time must fall, better ward a living wall. Scan the ebbing shore again, rounded rocks or skulls of men, sand above, steel beneath, where Edwin sowed his dragon teeth. That is dedicated to Edwin Bursark, 1st Earl Marshal. Who first taught me the use of arms. Does someone else have something? We're getting a little bit fewer, and perhaps we may end this in a little while, but if I have a more or less unlimited amount of things, but if other people have things as well, perhaps someone has something they can do.
May I share a stone song? May I share a song?
Surely.
Lorsque j'étais jeune fille, j'étais bien jolie gay. Il n'y avait pas beaucoup de filles comme moi gay. Et la vieille dame m'a beaucoup maltraité. Oh. Maintenant, je ne suis plus la belle que j'étais. Quand arriva l'âge de me marier, il y avait bien des jeunes dans flambant les jours, et la vieille dame m'a beaucoup maltraité. Oh. Aujourd'hui, j'en ai plus, et je ne vends vers moi. Après, je marchais donc vite à Londres pour tanguer. Toutes mes jolies paroles ne me plaisaient pas gai. Mais la pièce et l'âme m'a beaucoup maltraité. Oh. Maintenant, je ne suis plus rien qu'un pauvre prix.
Thank you. Here is another poem about someone who died centuries before I was born, but is still remembered. The second caliph. Umar ibn Khattab was his name, who bore us on beyond the double loss, prophet and successor, loss, a big, loud man among the who came to warm his heart in Mahmud's holy flame. He did not lie and had no friends. The toss that gave him rule the lands of peace across, the wisest choice of Abu Bakr's fame. He was a man who, once the truth was known, followed to death, beyond all limits brave, neither neglected, no, nor glorified his power. Going out on the dark tide, he left us leaderless, at last alone. The luck of Islam buried in his grave. They say that when Abu Bakr prayed by night, he used to recite from the Quran in a low voice, but Umar in a loud, strong voice. And the Prophet one day asked each of them why. He asked Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr answered, "Him to whom I speak will hear. And why, Umar, dost thou recite at the top of thy voice?" "To wake the drowsy and drive the devil away," said Umar. And our Lord the Prophet, God's peace and blessing upon him, used to say that if the devil met Umar upon the road, the devil would climb a high hill to get out of his way. And it is said that when Abu Bakr was dying, he asked the advice of those about him as to his successor and whether he ought to choose Umar. And one of them said, "Thou knowest him better than I, but speak and be not silent." Well, our Lord the Prophet, God's peace and blessing upon him, used to say, "Umar always speaks the truth, however harsh, and it is for that reason he has no friends." And so when Abu Bakr came to die, it was Umar he appointed for his successor. And it is said that when Umar was near his deathbed, his wife and daughter urged him to give up the fast that was commanded by our religion that he might live. And he answered, "I know all that you have to say and your arguments, but I had two comrades who took leave of me in a certain path, and I fear that if I do not stay in that path, I will not meet with them at journey's end." And so he continued even to his death. I think Umar and Al-Mamun are probably my two favorite caliphs. Although there are good stories about Muawiyah as well, that when Muawiyah was an old man, he was talking with the conqueror of Egypt concerning what things still gave them pleasure in their age. And the caliph, Allah be content with him, said, "What gives me pleasure in my age? Women, I am too old for women. Fine food and soft garments, I have had those enough. I still take pleasure to drink cool in the summer and to hear my children or my grandchildren playing about me. How is it with thee?" And the conqueror of Egypt answered, "I still take pleasure, would desire a little land, enough to grow food for myself and my family, and something over for the marketplace, that suffices." And while they were speaking, the freedman Wardan, who had been a freedman of the Prophet and was a servant of Muawiyah, came in. And the caliph said to him, "What is it that still gives thee pleasure in thy age?" For he too was an old man. And the freedman Wardan answered, "I still take pleasure in thinking that I may yet do some noble deed that will live in the memories of remembering men and earn after for me in paradise." And the prince of the Muslims turned to the conqueror of Egypt and said, "Enough of this talk. This slave is a better man than thou or I." So that's one of my Muawiyah stories. They say that when Muawiyah became caliph, a certain Bedouin came up to him and said, "All right, Muawiyah, now that you're caliph, you'd better deal justly by us. And if I do not, we will correct you." "How will you correct me?" "With a stick." "Well," said the caliph Muawiyah, may Allah be content with him, "I had best deal justly with thee." And he used to say that he would never lose his rule over the Arabs, for when they pulled, he let them go, and when they slackened, he went again. And he was the founder of the Umayyad dynasty, the first of the dynasties of the well-guided caliphs. Does someone else have poem, song, or story for the company?
I have a sonnet.
Thank you.
A young lord went to college, and at church did spy a lady fair, arrayed in gold. Thus ended his far-reaching bridal search. He asked her parents. Happily he told his own. The preparations were immense. Both families then jewels and silks did gift, but soon the bride's demands were losing sense. Betwixt her and his mother came a rift. "You love us not," proclaimed the angry bride. "You riches hoard, I like a peasant go. Your speech to me I never will abide. Your grandchildren you two shall never know." 'Twas done a decade past, and spoke she true. For funerals, for weddings, they'd not view.
Think of what other things people might enjoy. What lands do people come? I know we had somebody from the Northlands and someone from the Kingdom of England in Frangistan. From what places do other people come? I might know a poem or song or story from them. Poem or story.
I come from the land of three faiths, Your Grace. The land of three faiths that you know of, that you know well of, I'm sure. Amongst some people, it is called Sefarad, which is another word for paradise.
Well, I can certainly tell you a story concerning my story concerning Al-Andalus the Fair, which is the story of how the Umayyads came to rule in that.
Yes.
For you know that after the after the death of our Lord, the Prophet Muhammad, God's peace and blessing won him, his kindred, and his companion train, his successors were the four well-guided caliphs. And after the death of the fourth of them, the Caliph Ali, may Allah be content with him, he was succeeded by Muawiyah and his descendants, and they made the Umayyad dynasty. But after 100 years or so, it was the will of Allah that their cousins of the Abbasid house raised a rebellion against them. And the Black Banners triumphed and the Abbasids took the caliphate. And when it was done, they invited the princes of the Umayyads to a feast in celebration of peace, promising them safety. And at that feast, by treachery, slew them. All save two that escaped them. And they fled south and west, pursued by horsemen of the Abbasid. And they came to the river Euphrates, and that is a great river. They plunged in to swim across, and the pursuers called after them that if they swam on, they would drown. But if they came back, their lives would be spared. And one of the two turned back, and he was slain. But Abdurrahman swam on, and he came across the river. And he then traveled through that land until he came to the great river Al-Misra at the heart of Egypt. And that river, too, he swam. And so he traveled east to west, the width of the Maghreb, always with the hunters of the Abbasid at his heels, until he came at last to the Straits of El Jabir in the uttermost west. And coming there, he heard word that across the straits, in Al-Andalus the Fair, many of the chief men had in old days been clients of the Umayyad house, and held still to their loyalty. And so he crossed over the straits, and he made himself the leader of all who followed still the Umayyad cause in Al-Andalus the Fair. And as he had no banner, he set his turban upon a spear, and that was his banner. And under it, he conquered all of the fair land of Al-Andalus. But this word was not pleasing to the Abbasid who sat in the city in the palace of the caliph in the city of Damascus. And he ordered that an army be gathered, greater by far than any army that Abdurrahman might command, and it was sent against him in the fair land of Al-Andalus. And Abdurrahman was besieged in one of his great cities, and at the last pitch of despair, he called about him the bravest of his warriors, and he ordered that a bonfire be kindled. And drawing out his sword, he flung the scabbard into the fire, and so did they all, and sortied out with naked blade upon the besiegers. And such was the fury of their attack that the besieging army was set utterly to rout and ruin. And when the killing was done, he ordered that the heads be cut off from the chiefest commanders of the enemy host, and pickled in salt and camphor, and a label on each man's ear naming him. And those heads were put in a great sack along with the black banners of the Abbasid, and the diplomacy and the diploma of appointment for the Abbasid governor of Al-Andalus. And those were rowed across the straits at night and left in the marketplace of Kairouan. And when that sack reached the Abbasid in the palace of the caliph in the city of Damascus, and he opened it up and saw what was in it, he let out a great cry, "Thanks be to Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, who has set a sea between that man and myself." And that is the tale of how the Umayyads came to rule in Al-Andalus, the fair.
Wow, that was really good.
And I even have a verse about that. East of Abd al-Rahman, he had seen his brother fall. Westward was the coast where all roads drown. Trust alone in Allah, for he alone knows all. He set his turban on a spear and went to find a crown. Al-Andalus and all the West, when he had won his throw, with hunters baying at his heels, he dared not travel slow. He made them brace and bend their backs and row, row, row.
It is fortunate he survived the slaughter of his house.
Yes.
Indeed. The slaughter of his house at Jaffa.
Yes.
Even I have heard of that slaughter.
Yes. Fortunate for us as well. Are there others who?
I fear that we will take our leave at this point, but thank you so much. It would be a long year indeed without being able to share in an experience like this. Thank you so much.
Very good. I hope to continue holding it. I will make public announcement when I do it again. It is my usual custom to do it every evening of the second week at Pensac, but I'm not certain there are enough people for that to be justified this week, but at least I will have it from time to time.
Thank you for hosting this enchanted ground.
Right. Thank you all. And
thank
I will
you.
See in another 2 weeks or so. We'll see. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any left?
I'd love to hear more stories from Al-Andalus.
Oh. Anyone have, does anybody have something else for us? If not,
well, I do. Well, I may not have a story of Al-Andalus per se for the gentleman who just requested it, but I do have a story from a place close by, a story told to me by my nursemaid. She was from Morocco, and her people prayed with the rising and the setting of the sun. We knew this, but we loved her. And she told many lovely tales. I could tell a story from Morocco if the gentleman will not mind.
A story from the Maghreb, tell it by all means.
Sure, let's hear it.
All right. Well, one day a he-goat was browsing on a mountainside. Toward noon, when the sun was high, he came to the mouth of a cave and went inside to escape the worst of the heat until it was over. To his horror, in this cool shade, he came face to face with a lion. "What do you want?" growled the lion. Thinking fast, the goat stared fixedly at the lion for a while, and then he said, "I am one of the angels of heaven. The Lord of creation has sent me to kill 7 lions, 7 jackals, and 7 hyenas. I was checking to see if your markings fit the description of the animals that I must destroy." No, you are not one of them. You are destined to live long. Take your ease here in your cave while I continue my search." And the goat walked out of the cave. The lion was much shaken by this, and he eventually left his cave when he thought it was safe, and he met a jackal a little while later. And the jackal asked, "What troubles you so?" "I've met an angel sent by God to devour 7 lions, 7 jackals, and 7 hyenas. Luckily, it is my destiny to be spared, but you'd better be on the lookout for him." "What does this angel look up like?" said the jackal. "Oh, black," said the lion, "with a long beard and thick matted hair." "That sounds like a goat," said the jackal. "You should taste his flesh, and then you'll have a heavenly mouthful. Let's go look for him." and off they went, one behind the other, until they saw the goat in the distance. "This time there's no escape," the goat said to himself, and began to tremble for his life. Meanwhile, the lion and the jackal were closing in on him. When they were within earshot, the goat bellowed to the jackal, "Thou son of a cur, why do you bring me this lion? I have already examined him, and he's not the right one. That's not the lion I asked you to bring me." When the lion heard the goat, he pounced on the jackal, took him in his jaws, lifted him to the skies, and dashed him to the ground until every bone in his body was broken. Then he went away, and the goat ran off to the safety of the tents.
That's a very good story. Thank you. I like that one. But while you're telling stories about caves, I actually have a story about a cave which comes from our Lord the Prophet Muhammad, God's peace and blessing upon him, and his companion train. On a day, one of the companions said, "Prophet of God, tell us a story." And the Prophet of God told this story. There were three travelers who took shelter for the night in a certain cave. And during the night, a great thunderstorm came up with pouring rain and thunder and lightning. And it loosened a boulder uphill from the cave. And the boulder rolled down the hillside and blocked the mouth of the cave so tightly that no ray of light might come in. And in the morning, the travelers observed that they were trapped, and they pushed and they tried to dig, but it was all rock and nothing would succeed. And at last, the leader of the three said, "There is no might and there is no majesty, save in Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. Therefore, let each of us tell the tale of the best deed he ever did in his life, and it may be that our good deeds will plead for us before the throne." And so the first one took up the tale, and he said, "I hired some workmen to do a job of work. And when it was done, I paid them, all save one who had departed. And I took the money which I owed to him, and with it I bought a ewe. And that ewe had lambs, and those lambs had lambs. And some years later, the workman returned to me, and he said, 'Pay me the money you owe me.' And I said, 'I will.' And I brought him out to the meadow, and I showed him there a whole flock of sheep, and I said, 'This is what I owe you.' And he said, It was not so much. And so I explained to him that this was the increase of the money that I had owed to him. And so he took the herd of sheep and walked away. And if I speak truth, may Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, aid us in our distress.' And the boulder shook and trembled and moved just a little, enough that a ray of light might shine into the cave, but not enough that a man might get a handout. And the second one took up the tale, and he said, 'I was the only support of my aged parents. And every day I gathered dead wood in the forest, put it upon my back and bore it into the village to sell for a few small coins with which I bought food, brought the food home, cooked it for my parents, fed them, and after they ate, I ate. And one evening when I had cooked the food, my parents had fallen asleep and I would not wake them and I would not shame them by eating before they ate. And so I remained fasting all that night until in the morning my parents woke and they ate and then I ate. And if I speak truth, may Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, aid us in our distress.' And the boulder shook and trembled and moved a little ways, enough that a man might get an arm out, but not a body. And so the third man took up the tale. 'I was deep in love with a beautiful blind girl, but from all my entreaties, she would have naught to do with me. And so at last I gathered together all the money I could, some 80 or 90 dinar, and I sent it to her with the message that if she would lie with me, she might keep this money. And she consented to that. But when I came in and looked at her and saw her naked, I knew that what I intended was wrong and not right. And so I said, 'Keep the money.' And I departed, leaving her untouched. And if I speak truth, may Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, aid us in our distress." And the boulder shook and trembled and rolled off down the mountainside. And that tale we have from our Lord, the Prophet Muhammad, God's peace and blessing upon him, his kindred, and his companion train. Somebody else?
That was very good, Your Grace.
I'm glad you liked it. It is not my tale. It is the Prophet's. Does someone else have a poem, song, story, instrumental performance, or anything else? All right, well, I think perhaps we've been going long enough then, and I will see all of you, I think probably in 2 weeks. I will do another of these, but we will see. It is Allah alone that knoweth all things. Good evening all, and have a pleasant day.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, and thank you.
Good evening all.